Hey, y'all, and welcome back to the Magic Story Podcast. I'm your host, Harless.
And I'm your other host, Natalie.
In case you don't know, the Magic Story Podcast recaps the fiction story behind the card game, Magic the Gathering, adding in just a touch of our own flavor text as we go. We are in Season 8, following the story of Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
We have gone through the whole main story at this point, and we have seen our young hero, Kellen, accomplish defeating Akul and had a predictably terrible reunion with his father, Oko. And we are transitioning now to two epilogue stories that were released alongside Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Now, these epilogue stories, much like the aftermath after March of the Machine, are meant to dive into some details separate from the events of the main story, but are important context for the events to come in Magic Story.
And y'all, I am so excited about today's episode. So these epilogue stories for Outlaws at Thunder Junction are just phenomenally written, first of all. They're written by Allison Lurs. We've seen her in the past. We've read her work in the past. Amazing, amazing. 10 out of 10 new notes, right? But these stories literally made my jaw drop. I really cannot wait to dive into this with you all. And today's episode is the first part of a two-part epilogue titled Bring the End, Part 1. And of course, it is written by the very talented Allison Lurs.
Join us as we head into the multiverse.
Now, Allison Lurs is the same writer who authored a piece back during March of the Machine. It was a side story called One and the Same. And this was the story where Phyrexianized Vraska has gone back to Ravnica to serve justice to the Ravnican guilds.
That episode has always stood out to me personally, both reading it and our analysis here on the podcast. It is up there as one of my all-time favorite episodes. It was overwhelmingly brilliant, in my opinion. Like, the way Allison Lurs writes is just pure poetry. And my English nerd totally comes out whenever I dive into her writing. And so today's episode, written by Allison Lurs, like Harless, I am so excited. But it's been a long while for us on the podcast, and I'm sure everyone listening out there, I'm just going to recap One and the Same to jog our memories as to what happened during that episode.
And if you haven't listened to anything, if this is your first episode, don't worry. We're going to recap this last one for you so you can understand what's going on today. Because everything that happened is very important. And I'll let you get to it, Natalie. But I just, again, so excited.
It's going to be epic. Today's episode is going to be so epic. But I wanted to give a quick recap as to what happened in One and the Same. Because, like you said, Harless, these events are going to be important for what we are about to see today on the podcast. So One and the Same happened during the Phyrexian invasion. So rewind, like back by like five seasons. We are in the middle of the Phyrexian invasion. The multiverse is under attack everywhere. And Vraska is one of Elish Norn's evangels. She has been turned Phyrexian by New Phyrexia, and she has kind of lost her sense of self in that when you become a Phyrexian, you lose who you are and you become an embodiment of Phyrexia. Glory to Phyrexia. And that's Vraska. And she returns to her home plane of Ravnica to bring quote-unquote justice. And essentially what Vraska has been tasked to do by Elish Norn and the Phyrexians is to annihilate Ravnica. And we just saw Ravnica last season. It is a massive city plane. There is so many people here. There's so many, you know, so many cityscapes. So, like, there's so much here. And the destruction is just completely devastating. And Vraska, you know, runs across Rahl's wreck during this invasion. And Rahl had ended up kind of detonating an artifact on her that destroyed the glistening oil inside of her and had ultimately killed her. And this was really heartbreaking because Rahl Zarek was a friend of hers, you know, before Phyrexianization. And so we had ended One and the Same with Vraska essentially being quote unquote killed. And then her body went missing at the very end of One and the Same. But there was actually a scene just before she was proclaimed dead, like where we assumed that Vraska was dead, where Vraska kind of went into a mind palace of sorts where she had one last reunion with Jace. And Jace, of course, is kind of the love of her life. Like she's been in love with Jace for a while at this point. And there was this whole story of betrayal where Vraska had Phyrexianized Jace in the preceding season in Phyrexia All Will Be One. And so rewind a little bit earlier to where Jace is trying to is with our planeswalker heroes, and they're going into the Seed Core during Phyrexia All Will Be One, during those events. And they're trying to detonate the Silex and destroy Elish Norn and destroy Realmbreaker before the invasion happens. And they're going through the Dross Pits, this area in New Phyrexia, and Jace hears Vraska call out to him, and he hadn't seen Vraska since the start of these events with the Phyrexians. And so he goes to try and rescue her, and it turns out that Vraska had trapped him and turned Jace Phyrexianized. And so Jace, betrayed by his love, you know, and feeling the infection of the glistening oil at the end of Phyrexia All Will Be One. These were the finale events of this season. He's still holding the Silex, but totally like fighting internally in his mind and also his body, the Phyresis that wants to take over. And so that was the whole like climax essentially of Phyrexia All Will Be One, is that Jace was betrayed by Vraska, Phyrexianized. And what we had seen at the end of Phyrexia All Will Be One is Jace detonating the Silex and ignoring everyone's pleas to not do it. And if it wasn't for Elspeth, who had taken the Silex and basically planeswalked away with it into the Blind Eternities, they would have been all decimated there. And it was all Jace who did that. And we had seen Jace turned Phyrexianized completely by the end of Phyrexia All Will Be One.
Thanks, Natalie. That was a great recap. And one thing I want to add is that if you're not familiar with Jace, Jace is not just a mind mage. He is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful mind mage in the multiverse. And at any given moment, Jace is holding himself back from reading everyone's thoughts around him, from changing the worldview and the perception of everyone around him with just the snap of his fingers. Just not even that, a thought, a literal thought. And he could do all of that.
Yeah.
So he's always, because he has humanity, because he has a moral compass, because he has love for Vraska, because he has love for, you know, his friends, he holds himself back from being as powerful as he could be. Now, all that recap is important because we are behind Jace's perspective here in this epilogue. Now, Jace, we had seen Jace appear from his Ashiok disguise at the end of the main story just last episode. It was a shock to the characters of the story, but also to us as readers and lore enthusiasts, to just see Jace appear when literally the last we'd seen of him, he was Phyrexianized and manipulated by Elish Norn, absolutely one of her puppets. So how was he on Thunder Junction? How was he healed from Phyresis? Better yet, how was Vraska healed? Well, lucky for us, all of those answers are in today's episode. We are about to find out exactly what happened to Jace and Vraska at the end of March of the Machine.
I'm so ready. Okay, so let's rewind one more time. Rewind 5 whole seasons. That scene I was just describing, we are at the end of Phyrexia All Will Be One. Our planeswalkers are standing at the base of Realmbreaker. Jace has just been betrayed by Vraska. He's turning Phyrexian. He's quickly losing himself and holding the Silex. We are back in that very moment, that exact moment, at the start of today's episode, except now we are seeing it from Jace's perspective.
And before we go on, if you haven't already, I highly recommend you go and listen to this full audio story. I mean, seriously, Alison Lur's writing is so beautiful and poetic, and Natalie and I could spend hours on this episode rereading it word for word because it's that good. But for the sake of time in today's podcast, we can't read all of it directly from the story, so we'll take some of our favorite quotes to restate, of course, but a lot of our analysis today is summarized in our own words, which aren't nearly as eloquent as the story itself. So please forgive us for that and go listen to the audiobook. You will not regret it. Okay, so we're with Jace at the very end of Phyrexia All Will Be One. And it's clear Jace understands, believes that Phyrexia will win the invasion, and he has to stop it from happening. He himself is very consciously choosing to detonate the Silex right here, right now. Yes, he's fighting with the Phyrexianized consciousness that is slowly taking over his mind. But that's the most shocking thing right off the bat, is that Jace, the real Jace, is activating the Silex out of the steadfast belief that it is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and to quote the story here, Jace's heart aches for the billions and billions who will survive to suffer and witness their own annihilation. And he wishes the one person whose moral compass was steadfast as stone were here to champion his argument. The multiverse cannot persist if Phyrexia survives. We must let it start over. Even if we win, thousands of planes die. If we lose, existence is forsaken. We owe it to the planes and generations that follow to gift them a multiverse unpolluted by Phyrexia. They must act. Jace knows he is a bomb.
Back during this episode in Phyrexia All Will Be One, we were behind Kaya's perspective as she watched this unfolding. We were kind of led to believe that Jace maybe didn't have a clear mind doing this, that he was fighting the Phyrexianization and dipping into insane desperation, not really himself. Because Kaya simply could not believe that Jace would want to detonate the Silex and risk the entire multiverse after they'd seen Realmbreaker breach every plane. So absolutely, it is very shocking to hear Jace consciously made this decision and was extremely purposeful about his actions and still very much himself. And his friends, they won't understand. He thinks this to himself multiple times in the beginning of this passage. He's really making peace with that choice and that he'll look like the enemy, but he needs to act quickly before Elish Norn can use him as a weapon. And he can feel the oil creeping through his blood, the phyresis beginning to take hold. And out of sheer will of his power, Jace is keeping it at bay.
Jace, it turns out, is in a very similar mindset as Urza was all those thousands of years ago during the Brothers' War, when he detonated the Silex on Dominaria. The steadfast desperation is similar, which, as we know, is the key to unlocking the artifact. And I'm going to read directly from the story here. Jace grasps the Silex, and as he does, surrenders. "Wipe the land clear. Bring the ending," he murmurs. "I'm sorry." He cuts himself, and into the Silex he pours all the misery he can sense. The friends and planes lost to Phyrexia. Only true obliteration can cleanse. Jace's body seizes, his eyes are alight, and whatever hold he had on matter and self is severed. He panics, tries to grasp for control, reaching for the reins of his own body, but the completion is final. Jace, the Phyrexian, is here, and has no space for trivialities of the flesh. A wall crashes down, and his conscious mind closes off from the waking world, smothering him in the familiar dark.
His body remains, but Jace is gone. As he falls through the interior of his mind, he is sealing himself away, disconnecting from the surface. He can't tell if he wanted to retreat, or if the Phyrexian version of himself compelled him. Strange. This is what completion feels like. It is familiar. It feels like forgetting. And that line gave me chills. It feels like forgetting.
Yeah, so Jace is a mind mage, right? A very powerful one, as you had said, Harless. He can manipulate the minds of others. And I think most importantly, he can construct things like existences, realms inside of his own mind. And I think this is where he goes at first, like once the completion is done. It's kind of, he describes it as kind of like an ocean he falls into, a pristine beach of serenity and peace. But he's actually not here very long. He's pulled back whence he came almost immediately after landing here, but it's against his will. He describes it feeling like a riptide yanking him back out to sea.
And he wakes in his physical body. Now, during his transformation in the scene we just saw with the Silex, cables were growing out of Jace's arms. Because it's Phyrexia, so why not have cables sprouting out of your body? Because gross.
Gross.
Turns out he can actually see through these cables, like they have eyeballs on the end of them. So when he wakes, he recognizes he's in his own body, but it's different because he can see with his normal eyes. But when he closes them, he can also see through these Phyrexianized cable eyes. Because, again,
because, you know, gross. Phyrexia.
Yeah.
I'll read this from the story. His body is not his. It is now complete. There's action and yelling, his allies shouting nearby. Jace concludes that only moments have passed since he activated the Silex. He's awake, and he's not supposed to be. Panic. Everything is about to end. So why hasn't it? Jace glances down and sees a sword sticking through his chest, the halo within seeping from the wound it just carved. Oh. And that's his thought to having a sword shoved through his chest? Oh. It made me smile because, yeah, that kind of sounds like Jace.
He's been in worse situations, right? So panicking, he summons an illusion of himself, like an exact copy. And I'll read this from the story. His illusory double easily pulls out the sword while the true Jace, painfully aware of his own faculties, falls to the ground with the sword still in his sternum. He vomits black bile, spitting, shivering. His heart pounds with oil. He crouches, hands on the hilt, and with pragmatic courage, pulls the sword out. Invisible and anguished, doing everything he can to stay quiet, though what sounds emerge he smothers with a psychic wave. The sword lands on the ground, and he falls prone beside it, shaking, sputtering, the halo in the blade pinning his psyche to control over his Phyrexian body. He watches, unseen. And while Jace is struggling through all this, he sends that body double, that illusion, to stand beside Elish Norn. And again, this is from the story. He plays the illusion as quiet, controlled, cocky, yet submissive, a convenient tool for somebody else's schemes. And Elish Norn doesn't notice a thing. That's how you see me, isn't it, you telepathic toddler?
So the Phyrexianized Jace, quote unquote, I'm putting those in quotes, the Phyrexianized Jace we saw at the end of Phyrexia All Will Be One was just a double pretending to obey Norn's wishes. I mean, holy smokes, that was smart on Jace's part. I knew Jace was powerful, but I totally did not anticipate this. This blew my mind. And back in this scene, real Jace catalogs his situation. He can feel the halo in his blood alongside the oil kind of retaliating against it. He's in no state to save the multiverse anymore, so he kind of gives that up. But he begins to hold out hope he might be able to survive against the Phyresis if he can pull off some crazy mind mage tricks. But we know our Jace, and his thoughts aren't about saving himself. They're about saving Vraska.
Elish Norn gives the telepathic command to her evangels, which, of course, real Jace can hear too, and it is simply, go home. And remember, we know this from back in Phyrexia All Will Be One. She commanded all of her evangels to go to their home planes and basically cause complete destruction. And Jace interprets this quite literally, the command being she's sending her Phyrexianized planeswalkers back to the planes they came from to just spread that invasion as far as they can. And for Jace, that means returning to Vryn, his home plane. Now, Vryn, we're not going to dive in too deeply, but it's a really mysterious plane. It's kind of this rainy, gloomy sort of place, so like Seattle. But it's known for these things called mage rings, which are literally the inhabited ring-shaped pieces of the plane. The landscape shaped in rings, all controlled by powerful mages. This plane is very magical because of it. It's like a nucleus of mana, pretty much. And its denizens are always prepared for war. All of them are powerful mages that can defend against anything.
And Jace is struggling with two sides of himself. Just like we'd seen with Vraska, the real him is fighting against obeying Elish Norn's command, but the Phyresis is infecting his mind too, sending his consciousness back to that oceanic place he'd fallen before. The Phyresis pushes him away further, and he loses his control, careening back into the recesses of his mind and away from his body. Jace crashes into the mental waters of the shallow sea with a splash. And now he's trapped here, the halo losing its hold for his mind to occupy his body.
Jace crouches on the sand, desperate to think of a solution. How can a prisoner escape a jail cell with no door? You set it on fire, his mind helpfully suggests. A distant recollection burns to the surface, and he hears it there next to him on the beach. The brain is the seat of the body, and the body heals or withers at the brain's lead. It's an old memory. A complicated one, distant and echoed through decades and layers of forgetfulness. But its wisdom provides the answer. He needs to make himself sick. He needs to force his body to fight what his mind cannot. And that's exactly what he does. He projects his telepathic command through himself. And in the story, these are all in caps and bolded, which is a neat flavor ad that Allison did that I really love.
These commands that he's sick, he's breathing, he's alive, he needs to fight the oil like he would a virus, collapses this oceanic place his real self had kind of been exiled. And he's pulled back into his body, but still doesn't have control of it. So he's kind of in a similar state Vraska was in One and the Same, where she was witnessing what her Phyrexian self was doing, but had no control over it. And Jace has to witness himself wreak havoc on the Vryn people. His tremendous mind powers are absolutely fatal and terrible and heartless. His real self inside of him is roiling, but his Phyrexianized self is a machine, unstoppable. The decimation is, it's bloody and awful, and I'll read this part directly from the story. His heart breaks and his hands shake. Haunted, Jace sees his truth in the suffering in front of him. This is who he really is, an unstoppable power, untethered by shame. This is who we always could have been.
But Jace had telepathically commanded to make himself sick and fight the glistening oil in his body, and it worked to bring him back this far. So overwhelmed by all of this and needing it to stop, but having little control over his own body, he commands himself to sleep, and his body obeys. And when he wakes next, he's lying in a ravine, surrounded by Vryn and Phyrexian bodies, united, mind and body, once more. But he is very, very sick. Fighting the fever, the halo in his blood battling with the glistening oil, and after he reclaims this agency of himself, he pulls all the tubes out of his own body with a scream, which, ouch, oh my gosh. So imagine like having the worst flu of your life and then also like undergoing surgery, right? Like that's like the pain that he's dealing with right now. It's insane.
Yeah. He fights through this fever himself once more, but his body clearly not in great shape. He's dying, like quite literally, he's dying. But then he remembers Vraska, and that memory is powerful. His need to save her, to go to her, now that he has control again. He has to return home to Ravnica, and he manages to summon enough energy to planeswalk there. When he does, Ravnica is just in shambles. But endlessly, he searches for Vraska in the debris and the ruin of Ravnica.
The war rages. The Phyrexians are being pushed back. A racket of panicked invaders broadcast to his mind their worry that the leader is dead, that the Ravnicans have a device that can electrocute the oil, that they must flee. It is noise. All Jace can care about is the quiet, crystal ringing of Vraska's mind, whirring and fainting in the distance. He clambers over rubble, scans for an empty house. Jace sees Vraska splayed on the rooftop below. He can't help the sound he makes.
Oh my God. Okay, holy moly, this is just... Allison, why are you tugging on my heartstrings? After all of this, like separated, taken, betrayed, Phyrexianized, and Jace fought through all of that, raced across the multiverse. He's nearly dead, let's not forget. Just to be with her. And now
he can tell she's alive, but barely. He kneels, cradling her, using what is left of his will to raise her to his lap in panic. "Can you open your eyes for me?" he says, soft and charged. His alarm tremors through his hands. They are bloody and flecked with his own oil, but he caresses her cheek all the same. "Can you breathe?" She doesn't respond, so Jace lets himself in, just at the edge of her mind, in case that is easier for her. And he hears in response a familiar scoff. "Don't flatter yourself, Bellerin. You didn't literally take my breath away." He lets out a harsh exhale of relief and holds himself close to her. So these events are starting to align with what we saw from Vraska's perspective at the end of One and the Same. Remember that mind palace that she was in after Rahl detonated the artifact and like killed her? Remember Jace came up to that door because to her, it was her apartment. And he knocked on that door and asked those exact questions. So now we're seeing what actually happened.
So it was actually Jace. Like, he was physically, literally there, holding her, talking to her. But Vraska had to operate in this space inside of her mind that Jace had created for her while she was dying. We go through the same scene from the end of One and the Same. Jace inside her mind with her, that heartfelt reunion we'd seen from Vraska's perspective. And then he decides to cure her. If he can cure himself using those telepathic commands and his abilities, he can save her. He's determined. He presses his forehead to hers, and I love the metaphor from the story. A cannon aimed at a house of glass.
Of course, the story beautifully explains what he does next, but we'll summarize here in a not quite as beautiful way. So Jace projects that telepathic command into Vraska's mind that she's sick, she must fight the virus, while protecting her real self from the Phyrexianized version that persists also inside her mind. Super casual, no big deal, right?
No big deal.
All while doing this, Jace physically hauls Vraska into his arms and planeswalks them both out of Ravnica. And Jace goes home. Like, literally, really, he goes home. Both he and Vraska are half dead, they're dying. Phyrexian tubes are literally falling out of Jace's back, but he drags them both through the blind eternities to collapse onto a hand-woven rug on the floor of this house in Vryn.
And this is from the story. The rug is old, an indigo hand-woven thing, with elaborate circles and simple horses. And as Jace rolls onto his back, he feels awful for bleeding all over it. The room they landed in is smaller than he remembered. Whitewashed panel wood, a low ceiling with exposed bare beams, and a homemade bookcase that takes up the entire span of the wall, opposite of which is a long horizontal window that jitters with rain. There's clutter everywhere, and a pair of glasses on top of a pile of books near his face. Vraska is flushed with viridian, breathing but coughing. Jace wheezes alongside with fever of his own. He tries to move his hand to grasp hers, and as he does, a hunk of metal flakes from her fingers. She looks like hell, and so does he, cables falling and sores opening, but she's alive, so she is beautiful. He smiles, and it takes the last of Jace's effort.
Impossible, a voice says. A voice Jace says he hasn't heard in decades. The voice belongs to a woman who steps into the room, obviously stunned and wide-eyed, staring at Jace and Vraska lying half-dead on her floor. And this woman is Rana Bellerin, Jace's mother. And this is from the story. Rana approaches tentatively, her right fingers pinched at a pointed cluster of azure light, a scalpel spell wielded as an impromptu defense. But she halts as Jace's eyes match with hers. Jace. She whispers his name like it's a curse. He is too tired to talk, so Jace speaks directly to the woman's mind just as the fever and exhaustion overtake him. Please help us, Mom. I'm so sorry.
Ah, and that's how we end today's episode.
That's the end.
Oh my gosh. It was such... Today's episode just blew my mind in so many ways.
It revealed so much.
Yeah.
It revealed so much. Like, when we got to the end of Outlaws at Thunder Junction, I was just like, what is happening? What is happening? What is happening? And we're still not fully there. But in episode 2 of the epilogue, so the second part of the epilogue, which we're going to release next, you're going to get all those questions answered. We're going to figure out what happened in between this moment of them being super sick and then showing up at the vault and taking loot. So it's a big leap, but I'm so excited because you're going to get answers and they're going to make sense. And that to me was this episode was just like setting all that up, yes, but it was also just like, it was very heartwarming. It was very touching. Like, it really showed us a lot about Jace's character. And it's so interesting to me how Jace can hold all these different emotions, like, in his body. Like, how difficult to be able to say, like, I'm going to destroy the whole world because it's the right thing to do. But then also be so singularly focused on saving the love of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, like, I'm grateful, obviously, that he didn't destroy the entire multiverse.
Right. Same.
And that
too.
He gets to see Vraska again. And if he had done that, he never would have seen Vraska again. He wouldn't have been able to save her. And Lord knows what would have happened to Vraska. So,
yeah,
I was reading this and I was just like, I was so enraptured in reading this. Like,
yes.
I was full hyper focus. Like, my husband was trying to talk to me and I was just like,
no, don't talk to me.
I didn't even hear it.
Yeah,
I didn't even hear it. I was in it.
Yeah, it was so good. Same. I was like, I was, it was one of those where I like I couldn't put it down. I had to keep reading. I was so enthralled with it. And like we say this like several times throughout this episode, but seriously, go listen to the audiobook or go read it because it's so good. It's so like we couldn't read it all. I couldn't help myself. I included a lot of like my favorite excerpts that we read here today, but like it's so good to just read it, and it will totally immerse you into this moment with Jace, and it answers so much. It's like everything clicked. Like it was like pinging off left and right over like, oh, that's why. Oh, that's, I understand mm-hmm. so much now. Oh, that's what happened. Oh, now I see where Jace was coming from. Now I know how he operated the Silex. Now I know, you know, how he got to like what happened with Vraska at the end of that one in the same episode back in March of the Machine, because I was so confused as to whether that was real or whether it was, you know, part of Vraska dying or whether Vraska really died. Like there was so much that was answered here, and it makes me so excited for part two, because this is only part one. Like Harless had mentioned that we're going to release part two next, and it continues those answers, and we get to continue to see what happened to Jace and Vraska.
One of the things I love about magic is that we can do these big overarching stories, and we can say like, okay, this arc is wrapped up and we're moving on to another arc, but something from that last arc can come back up again in the next arc, and on and on and on. And so like we'd never have to stop telling the story. We always get the opportunity to give clarity, to bring it back in. And I love that about magic, because, you know, a lot of the time you read a book, you're done with that book, that's the end. Even a long series, there's only so much, right? But magic story has been going on for so long. Those of you who've been reading for a while are probably going, wait a minute, Jace's mom, what? And we're going to talk about that in next episode as well. So whether you've been listening for a long time or whether you're just tuning in, like this episode was absolutely nuts. It answered so many questions for those of us who've been listening since or reading since the Phyrexian invasion. And I'm just so grateful for it. It just really, it felt like this nice little bow tied up on the end of this big
It was so satisfying. It was so satisfying to finally get the answers and to have that nice little bow that, oh, that's what happened. Because I had so many questions in regards to Jace and Vraska. And I love Jace and Vraska. Like, I had fallen in love with them since that episode in Phyrexia All Will Be One, you know, when Jace went to go rescue her like a valiant hero and ended up being betrayed by Vraska in the Dross Pits. It was just devastating. And I haven't been able to let it go since. And I'm so glad to be back with Jace and Vraska, and they've clearly changed. You know, they obviously can never go back from this, and we're getting so much, like you said, Harless, I think I really appreciate so much more depth about Jace in this episode, and we get into his perspective and we get truly who he is, and we're realizing that, you know, Jace is a complex character. He's always been a complex character, but I feel like that's getting more so. Right. We're seeing deeper layers to him now because he's had to become this Phyrexianized version. And we're starting to see, you know, this unhinged feeling almost. Like, I mean, he detonated the Silex. I mean, he destroyed Vryn. You know, like it, like we're seeing pieces of Jace now that maybe were hidden until now. We're just like, we're seeing so many more complexities come to surface because of all this.
Well, these were things he hid from himself. Like, there's one line in the story that sums it up really well, where he's basically like, this is what I always had the potential of being. This is what I always could have been.
That stood out to me,
and
too. Yeah.
He's always been hiding that part of himself from everyone, including himself. Like, we all do that, right? We've all got memories we want to suppress, or we have, like, a thought that will pop up and you're like, Jesus Christ, where did that come from?
Yeah,
like,
that's not me.
Like, where did that come from? But for Jace, like, it's so much more real, and it's harder. And now he's been faced with like, okay, this is what I'm capable of. This is who I could be given the right/wrong situation. So I thought that was really interesting. But everything about today's episode was so intense. We learned so much. And I think I'm going to have to pick my draw back up off the floor after this one. But unfortunately, that is all we have time for today. We still have part two of this epilogue story to go over in our next episode, though. So we still have some more to unravel here. And if you liked today's episode, please tell us. Your reviews mean so much to us. We read every single one. We take all your feedback into account, and we appreciate all of you.
As always, you can read this story for yourself at mtgstory.com. And if you want the audiobook of the full story, you can read it on this same playlist you're listening to now, or there's even a YouTube version as well. Seriously, this episode was so good, both a treat to read on the page as well as to listen to Allison Ler's incredibly poetic writing. Go check it out.
And I just wanted to say a special thank you to Clayton Crowe, who actually narrated both of the episodes of the epilogue for Natalie and I. We so appreciate it. He did such a good job. So if you appreciated Clay's readings, please go ahead and leave us a comment about that as well. But thank you so much for listening, all. I'm so excited to see you tune into our next episode coming right around the corner. But until then,
have a magical day.